Illifer had been warning them for years. Only now, only with the humiliating rout of the peacekeepers from Moonbase, were they beginning to take his warnings seriously. His desk phone beeped once. Illifer didn't have to pick it up. He knew that he had been summoned at last into the presence of General O'Connor. Illifer hurried past rows of empty, silent desks and down a corridor formed by flimsy, shoulder-high plastic partitions. Through an open door, he stepped into a reception area that was tastefully carpeted and furnished with small consultation desks. The door at the far end was shut. He knocked once and opened it. General O'Connor was sunk in his wheelchair, half-dozing, a shriveled shell of the dynamic, powerful savior Killifer had met when he had joined the Urban Corps nearly 8 years earlier. They had kept the news of the general's strokes a secret, of course, known only to the innermost circle of the Corps. Not even the highest leaders of the other new morality groups knew about it. To the outside world, General O'Connor was still the vigorous, forceful, charismatic leader of the organization that was transforming American cities from crime-ridden slums into rigidly controlled urban centers. With the staff's careful handling of the crisis, General O'Connor had become an inaccessible figure, too lofty to waste his time with meetings and rallies. And the more inaccessible he became, the greater the tales of his power and saintliness. The less he was seen, the more he was admired and sought after. Rumors abounded of his appearances in disguise among the poor. He was seen all across the country, sometimes in more than one place simultaneously. Thanks to clever electronic simulations that kept his image before the public, the general was becoming a figure of mythic power.
"Well, what are you waiting for?"
General O'Connor said in his cranky, slurred croak of a voice. "I thought you had fallen asleep," said Killifer, going to the armchair beside him. The general worked the toggle on his wheelchair's control box and trundled off toward the windows.
"Is the whole city blocked out, except for us?"
Killifer had to get up and follow him. "Most of the city," he replied. "When curfew strikes, the power goes down. Electricity stays on for residences, of course."
"Apartments, too? Condos?"
"Yeah. It wouldn't be smart to shut off their power."
"Then why is everything pitch black out there?" the general demanded. "Are we the only ones showing any light?"
Killifer had explained this to the failing old man a dozen times since the blackout decision had been announced. "That's right. We're the only one," he said. "The apartment blocks and condo buildings curtained their windows as a sign of respect." The wizened old man glared at him.
"And whose idea was that?"
"Yours, of course," he said.
"I never made such a decision. I'd remember it if I did."
"Well," said Killifer, "it was mine, really. Acting in your name, of course." Actually, it had been the bright idea of one of the young psychologists on the staff, but Killifer had implemented it, and he'd be damned if he'd let the young snot take the credit.
"Why?"
O'Connor asked testily. Killifer replied, "It gives the ordinary people the feeling that they're making a sacrifice. It makes them feel that they're contributing to the general welfare."
"You've learned well," rasped O'Connor. "Make them want to obey. That's the secret."
"You've taught me well," Killifer said, feeling something almost like affection for the old man. Wheeling his chair around to face Killifer, General O'Connor said,
"Now, what's happening with the Moonbase problem?"
Killifer shook his head. "It's getting worse instead of better."
"I see they're broadcasting news reports from Moonbase. I thought the media had agreed to a blackout."
"They had, but it's been busted wide open." The general's bloodshot eyes narrowed.
"How? Who did it?"
Killifer explained the series of events, tracing the break of the news blackout to Tamara Bonai in Kiribati.
"Kiribati?"
General O'Connor's ravaged face glared at him.
"Where's that?"
"In the Pacific. Micronesia." The general seemed to sink in on himself, thinking. Then he started cackling. "What's funny?" Killifer asked.
"I did missionary work out there when I was a kid."
That surprised Killifer. "You did?"
"Tonga, Fiji. I wore the black suit and tie and went out among the heathen.
He wiped at his eyes with a frail hand. I never knew.
They were good people. They listened to me and smiled and agreed with everything I said. Helped me build a church for them. They even attended services.
Terrific, Killifer muttered.
But it didn't do one bit of good. They went about living the way they always had. Dressed up for me, of course. But other times they went back to being as naked as sin. To them, sex was about as casual as taking a swim in the lagoon.
He almost sounded wistful, Killifer thought.
Well, now they have office buildings and shopping malls and major tourist centers. And this woman, what's her name?
Tamara Bonai.
She broke the news blackout?
She sure as hell did.
Then she ought to be punished, General O'Connor said. Swiftly and obviously. People ought to know that those who oppose God's will are struck down.
Killifer's insides shuddered. You mean kill her?
Yes, said the general. See to it.
Me?
You. And nobody else.
He started to say, but why me? I'm no... O'Connor's burning red eyes silenced him. The general had made up his mind, and he had chosen Killifer for the job. That was unalterable. One thing that Killifer had learned in his 8 years with the Corps, you obey, but you ask for something in return. If we're going to punish people, what about Joanna Stavanger? I mean Brudenoy.
She's back here? Back from the moon?
Yeah. O'Connor mulled it over for 10 seconds.
You're right. Strike her down, too.
Killifer nodded, satisfied. The woman who had ruined his life was going to get what she deserved at last.
Too bad we can't get a son. Douglas Stavanger?
Yeah. He's up at Moonbase, though. Out of reach. General O'Connor pointed a wavering finger at Killifer.
Don't be so sure of that, my boy. No one's out of reach of the Angel of Death.
Day 16.
Hey, what are you doing here?
The mercenary looked up. A woman in the slate-gray coveralls of the transportation division was striding down the line of spacesuits toward him. She looked to be in her 30s, a little heavy-set, mousy brown hair chopped short, and an angry frown on her face.
Doug Stavanger asked me to check out his suit, the mercenary said.
I maintain the suits, she said, jabbing a thumb toward her ample chest. Her name tag said Leibowitz. Since when does Stavanger send strangers to do my job? She was almost the mercenary's own height, and now that she was almost nose to nose with him, he saw that her size was probably muscle, not fat. He put on a smile.
Doug's worried about sabotage, he said. The best lies are always based on the truth, he knew.
Sabotage? Are you kidding?
The mercenary shook his head slowly.
No, I'm not kidding, Leibowitz. We're at war, aren't we? Under siege?
But who the freak's gonna sabotage anything here? Everybody here is for Moonbase. We're all on Stavanger's side.
Yeah? Were you at the meeting in the cave last week?
Sure.
How many people there wanted to go back Earthside right away?
Leibowitz's expression turned thoughtful.
Well, a few, I guess.
And they won't be able to go until this war is settled, right?
Oh, I don't know. Stavanger talked about arranging an evacuation flight for him.
Have you seen any evacuation flight arrive? The UN wants to keep us bottled up here until we cave in.
Yeah, maybe.
The mercenary was enjoying sparring with her. He began to think it might be fun to share a meal with her, get to know her better. She was white, of course, but maybe... He pushed those thoughts aside.
Well, don't you think that maybe some disgruntled technician or administrator might figure that a little sabotage here or there will help make us surrender and end the war? Then he can go home.
Leibowitz almost bought it, but after a few moments she said,
Nah, I just don't see